Hello and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks, part of Learning College. I'm Alex Linder. VNNforum.com is where you find everything that we do. Today we're going to do Chapter 4 of The International Jew by Henry Ford and his researchers with the Dearborn Independent. That's out of Detroit, the great automaker. And he called Jews because the subtitle of The International Jew is The World's Foremost Problem. And as they were back in 1921 or the early 20s when he had this book written, so they are today in 2015 as I speak to you. Now, Chapter 4 is Are the Jews a Nation? It begins with an epigraph from Louis Brandeis, the justice of the Supreme Court justice, who is, I believe, the first Jew appointed to the Supreme Court. Quote, "Let us all recognize that Jews are a distinct nationality of which every Jew, whatever his country, his station, or his shade of belief, is necessarily a member." So it's an international genetic criminal clan, is what we like to say. And the fact that a Jew may be an atheist in no way is not consonant with being a Jew. So the Jews slash right, thinking that URL way, always tell the conservative dupes that, oh, it wasn't Jews who created the Soviet Union, it was atheists. What they don't tell them that is that being an atheist and being a Christian are opposed, but being an atheist and being a Jew, there's no problem at all, because Jews are a race masquerading as a religion. Now, Chapter 4, Are the Jews a Nation? No Gentile knows how many Jews there are in the United States. The figures are the exclusive property of the Jewish authorities. The government of the U.S. can provide statistics on almost every matter pertaining to the population of the country, but whenever it is attempted in a systematic way to get information about the Jews who are now constantly entering the country, and the number now resident here, the Jewish lobby at Washington steps in and stops it. The Jews conceal their strength because Jewish influence at the Capitol has been strong enough to win on all matters affecting Jewish interests at all times. Now, we know that there were comparatively few Jews, mostly of German descent, in the U.S. before 1880. After 1880, until 1924 and the Act, which was right after this book was written, Jews poured in over those four decades. And he's saying even before that 1924 Immigration Act, which is practically the last time Jews lost in politics, or one of very few times when they wanted to basically open immigration to the third world the way it is now, or the way that they got it, got the law changed in 65, they wanted back in 1920s, but they didn't get it because the native forces were still strong enough and they hadn't coined the term racism yet, so they called them nativists. But even then, he was saying the Jews were strong enough to prevent their number from being counted and to win on all matters affecting their interests back in 1921. And remember, I think I've cited before Madison Grant, or was it Lothrop Stoddard? I think it was Madison Grant, one of the racialist writers of this time, was saying that already it was nearly impossible to get an honest word about anthropology and race into the press because it was controlled by Jews. Already that early. So their influence was already pretty much as soon as they got to the country, or at least by 1900, they already had a very strong influence in the U.S., despite comparatively few numbers. Immigration into the U.S. has became a business 40 years ago, a strictly Jewish business. That would be 1880. Isn't that interesting? Immigration became a business 40 years ago in 1880, a strictly Jewish business. There is a perfect organization which overcomes the numerous objections which arise against the admission of known revolutionary Jews. European Jews are potential revolutionaries. And remember, the Soviet Union was produced by Jews largely out of, along with native radicals, Jew radicals out of Lower East Side of New York City, and funded by Jacob Schiff and other Jews also out of New York. So Ford is saying, why are we bringing these Jewish radical revolutionary communists who would end up murdering, right then they were at the start of their campaign, to murder more white men than any other group in history, these Jewish atheist communists over in Russia. So why admit known revolutionary Jews? European Jews are potential revolutionaries. America has not been called the Jews' country. in the small, in quotes, the Jews' country, and the smaller nations of Europe for nothing, and the alarming increase in Jewish immigration brings the question to public attention again. A national conviction is forming upon the subject, for it is apparent that the strictly Jewish business of getting Jews into the U.S. moves like an army which, having done duty in Europe for the subjugation of that continent, has transferred itself to America. Jewish secret societies in America are the principal aids in this long stampede to America. They are able to, quote, arrange the passport work. They arrange, in quotes, avoidance of the health regulations. He's saying the Jews have taken over Europe. Now they're trying to take over America. The laws of the country are set aside in open contempt. And how resonant is that today in 2015? It's not so much Jews coming over, though there's plenty of those, as the third worlders they're using as they think they're an endgame with swamping the entire white West with mud world aliens. The laws of the country are set aside in open contempt, he's saying nearly 100 years ago, 95 years ago from when I'm reading this. The Jewish immigrants can come from anywhere and are coming from everywhere. Their first glimpse of life here shows a Jewish control as potent and complete as it is in Russia. And again, he's writing 4 years after their successful Soviet revolution, the Russian Revolution, as they call it. They see officials of Jewish secret societies override officials of the United States Immigration Bureau. Why should they not behave as if they own the U.S.? No wonder that they literally beat down the walls and gates with all the éclat of a victorious invasion. It is an invasion, nothing less, and it is inspired and helped by influences within the United States. When it is not secret, it is thinly cloaked with sentiment, quote, these people are fleeing from persecution. So that's always the Jews' eternal cover story, that he's being persecuted elsewhere, when in fact he's the one doing the persecution and creating the miserable politics that stirs the resentment of the natives who built the country, whether in Russia or in the U.S. After the tide of Jewish invasion into the United States in the 1880s became too wide for anyone to ignore the dangers, the census authorities asked Congress for permission to classify people by race, as well as by country of birth, race and country of birth, in quotes. The strongest opposition was led in Congress by the Jews, principally by Simon Guggenheim and Julian W. Mack. Hearings had to be ordered to know what elements were comprising the population, whether the United States was an Anglo-Saxon, Semitic, Latin nation, or what. The Jewish opposition to the hearings disclosed four matters very clearly. One, the Jew is opposed to any restrictive legislation against his entrance into a country. Two, the Jew is opposed to any racial classification of himself after he has entered a country. Three, the Jewish argument to the Gentile authorities is that the Jew represents religion and not race. Four, the Jew has one view to present to the Gentiles and another which he cherishes among his own people on the question of race, British in public, Yiddish in private. So the Jews are showing one face to the Goyim, demanding they be counted as a religion rather than a race. And basically they're trying to hide the true nature of who they are and what they're doing. They have an agenda. They function as essentially as a team and against the interest of the naive individualist suckers of Anglo-Saxon descent who are going by their Christian universalism and treating Jews as individuals. And that works no more today than it ever has. Whites simply have to reform society on the basis of race and exclude all other races. Otherwise, they're going to be taken over by these networked, very energetic, smart people. When Americans disregarded as untenable the argument of religion, not race, in quotes, the Jewish spokesmen were able to fall back on the fact that their powerful organizations did not want certain things and would not have certain things, argument or no argument, commission or no commission. The Jewish lobbyists had their way. There is no enumeration of Jews in the United States. There are classifications for all other races and nations, but none for the Jew. None of the other races made objection, but the Jew is not distinguished at all. What is the result today? If you ask the government of the United States how many Frenchmen there are in the country, it can give you the figures. If you ask for the number of Poles, it is there. If you ask for the number of Africans, it is known. Down a long list, you may make your inquiries. You will find that the government knows. But ask the government of the United States how many Jews are in the country, and it cannot tell. There are no records. And in that subtitle, and the second one is Race or Religion. And we're just about to, we're on page 49. This runs up to about 58, I think. This is chapter 4 of roughly 10, roughly a 231 page book published in 1921. Race or Religion. What have the Jews themselves to say about race or religion? Quote, in quotes, race or religion. The following quotations put the reader in the possession of information regarding the Jew's own thought of himself as a member of, italics, a separate people, end italics, quite aside from the consideration of his religion. So Jews, the key is that Jews see themselves as a separate group and hostile to everyone else. And their doctrine that is called their religion justifies them in doing literally anything to those who are not Jews. And it's not just their doctrine, that's how they actually act. And that's why no other race, particularly the one we care about, whites, can do anything but treat Jews as a hostile group. You simply cannot treat them as individuals without putting your race's continued existence at stake. That's what history is unveiling to show. You see, these bad doctrines that whites have, this is a point that I almost despair of making so that other people understand it, because the average IQ level is so too low in our movement, that the Christian doctrine has always been genocidal to whites. And the only reason it didn't reveal itself as such was the lack of communications and other technology, transportation technology, to bring its latent problems out into the open. And now that's what we're seeing. Now that these Africans know about, the entire world knows about everything else in the world through TV and the internet. Everyone has cell phones. Most people have internet access. We can see what is going on literally anywhere in the world. As I mentioned before, I can look up some botanical garden on the other side of the world in Hobart, Tasmania. And I can Google Earth down the streets and look at the cars parked there. So every corner of the earth can know what's going on in every other corner. And when the 7/8 of the world that's, you know, say fairly not well off sees what's going on in the better off parts, why? They don't have anything better to do than to try to get there. And now they have means by which they can get there. All kinds of mechanized buses, trains, automobiles, planes. And if they do get there, they have all kinds of social democratic welfare. And they have media controlled by Jews who seek to use them, who are willing to make every possible excuse for their very lowest behavior, certainly not omitting rape and murder. So all the conditions have now been perfected, almost brought about as if to demonstrate that Christianity is inherently white genocidal. Now, that's not what Henry Ford would say. That's me saying that. But you only need to worry about whether I'm right. Christianity is a universalist religion. It admits all comers. Now, the devil can cite scripture for his purpose. Basically, anyone from a Marxist to a Nazi can cite verses that appear to support his position. But that does not mean that it's pro-white. It means that that's one of the ways it could be used. But if there are also anti-white ways it could be used, as there are and as we see today, with no less a figure than the Pope right down there encouraging the Libyans to, the Italians in Europe to accept with open arms these boats packed absolutely full of blacks and Muslims who are literally throwing Christians out of the boat at sea while the Pope is standing on the shore welcoming them in. What else do you have to say? And for those minority of you listening who don't know this, read the book The Camp of the Saints by Jean Raspail, R-A-S-P-A-I-L, written in the 70s, which shows you the feeble, weak Christian mentality and how it would lead to the undermining of Europe. They simply don't have anything in their doctrine to resist these newcomers because they've made it, it's all about love. There's not a word said in the Bible in favor of good, solid thinking, common sense, rationality, or justice. It's all about love, empty love, and the basic problem is that the church accepts everybody. It says we are all one in the mystical body of Christ, is how the Catholics put it in their catechism. And so, ultimately, a racial doctrine of any kind is going to be at odds with the spirit of the thing. Even if you can tease out some arguments that make a certain plausible sense or logical or rational, so can the other guy. And you're fighting the spirit of the cult, and it doesn't work. And if the fact is too many who think they are Aryan racialists are simply tone deaf on this stuff, it's not something that can ever be gotten around. It's an inherently anti-white universalist creed, and it has nothing to do with racialism. It is a competing worldview and needs to be considered the enemy. Now, we're going to see some quotes from under racial religion subhead, returning to the text about the Jews considering themselves, how the Jews regard themselves. And in general terms, they regard themselves as a separate people. Leo N. Levi, president of B'nai B'rith, 1900 to 1904, 10 years before the founding of the ADL, in relation to the Leo Frank trial, of course. That's what the ADL came out of. Leo Levi, president of B'nai B'rith, start of the 20th century, quote, "The distinctive character of the Jew does not arise solely from his religion. It is true that his race and religion are indissolubly connected, but whatever be the cause of this junction of the race idea with the religion, it is very certain that the religion alone does not constitute the people. The religion alone does not constitute the people. A believer in the Jewish faith does not by reason of that fact become a Jew. On the other hand, however, a Jew by birth remains a Jew even though he abjures his religion." So the head of B'nai B'rith in 1900 is saying that a Jew is something genetic, not religious, because even if he converts to another faith, he's still a Jew. And even if he converts to Judaism, he's still not a Jew. It's genetic, not religious. You have the head of the B'nai B'rith admitting that, Leo N. Levi. Goetz, that's Heinrich Goetz, he's the historian of the Jews, a very famous one, cited by a Modern Times guy, Paul Johnson, the main one used by the neoconservatives, and also cited, I think, by MacDonald and others. Heinrich Goetz, G-R-A-E-T-Z, that'd be like an umlaut A over the A in German. The historian of the Jew, whose monumental work is one of the standard authorities, says that the history of the Jews, even since they lost the Jewish state, and again, this guy is writing, 27 years before the founding of Israel in 1948, quote, Goetz, "still possesses a national character. It is by no means merely a creed or church history." So Goetz is confirming that even though they were dispersed in these various lands, they still form one nation. It's just international without borders before Israel, but they are genetically related because they marry among themselves and have for many thousands of years, and they form an alien nation, alien to the nation they live in, as Jefferson said. Moses Hess, one of the historic figures through whom the whole Jewish program has flowed down from its ancient sources to its modern agents, from Rome to today, wrote a book entitled Rome and Jerusalem, in which he stated the whole matter with clearness and force. A bit of a quote here. "The Jews are something," this is a quote from Moses Hess, "the Jews are something more than mere followers of a religion, namely, they are a race, a brotherhood, a nation." That's what B'nai B'rith means, brothers of the cut. Another quote from Hess, three more. "A Jew belongs to his race, and consequently also to Judaism, in spite of the fact that he or his ancestors have become apostates." Apostate is one who leaves a religion or a political position. Like a turncoat. "Every Jew is, whether he likes it or not, solidly united with the entire nation." Like ISIS would consider apostates all Muslims who don't follow their particular branch and kill them for that reason, as opposed to kafirs who are kufir, actually, who are non-believers, who they would also kill. So a Jew belongs to his race and consequently also to Judaism, in spite of the fact that he or his ancestors have become apostates. And then a third quote, every Jew is, whether he likes it or not, solidly united with the entire nation. So Jews are a team. You have a Jew, one of the most prominent Jews, confirming. Every Jew is united with the entire nation, whether he likes it or not. And then finally, Jewish religion is, above all, Jewish patriotism. That makes sense. Louis Brandeis, Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States and world leader of the Zionist movement, wrote in his book Zionism and the American Jews, "Despite the meditations of pundits or the decrees of councils, our own instincts and acts and those of others have defined for us the term Jew." Rabbi Morris Joseph, says Ford, sometime of the West London Synagogue of the British Jews, Rabbi Morris Joseph, writes in his book Israel, a Nation, quote, "Israel is assuredly a great nation." So the Jews form a nation. And Judaism is their patriotism, and it's more political than religious. Again, Rabbi Morris Joseph, British Jew in Britain, West London Synagogue of British Jews, Israel, his book Israel, a Nation. "Israel is assuredly a great nation. Israel is recognized as a nation by those who see it. No one could possibly mistake it for a sect." That is something that's simply an ideological division of a particular faith. He's saying it's a genetic line. To deny Jewish nationality, you must deny the existence of the Jew. The Jewish barrister Bertram B. Benas, B-E-N-A-S, kind of probably the same, remember the character in Seinfeld was named Elaine Benas, and I believe she was a Jew on the show, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a Jew in real life. Bertram Benas, B-E-N-A-S, probably just an alt spelling, writes in Zionism, the National Jewish Movement, quote, "The Jewish entity is essentially the entity of a people." Leon Simon, a brilliant and impressive Jewish scholar and writer, makes an important study of the question of religion and nationality, in quotes, in his volume Studies in Jewish Nationalism. He makes out a case for the proposition that the religion of the Jews is nationalism, and that nationalism is an integral part of their religion. Now, three quotes from Leon Simon, who's not one I'm familiar with. First, the Messianic Age means for the Jews not merely the establishment of peace on earth and goodwill to men, but the universal recognition of the Jew and his God, i.e. as though through a global government where they are the rulers. Quote, "Judaism has no message of salvation for the individual soul, as Christianity has. All its ideas are bound up with the existence of the Jewish nation." So Judaism is a collective thing, not an individual soul thing as Christianity is. That's a very important distinction. So we're supposed to be individuals and judge men as individuals and take their motives at face value the way we want them to treat us. That's the golden rule. Whereas they are to act as a people, a race, a nation that is in competition with all others. Are you seeing why they always win and Christians always lose? The idea that Jews are a religious sect precisely parallel to Catholics and Protestants is nonsense. Arthur D. Lewis, a Jewish writer in his The Jews a Nation, also bases nationality. Arthur Lewis, a Jewish writer, and again, there's a goy cover name, Lewis, used to be a pundit. When I was first reading op-ed pages, Anthony Lewis wrote for New York Times, super leftist, always irritated me. I believe he was a Jew. Peevish, irritating, not very honest Jew. But here's another Jew named Lewis, Arthur Lewis, a Jewish writer, and is The Jews a Nation, also bases nationality on the racial element. "The Jews were originally a nation and have retained more than most nations one of the elements of nationality, namely the race element. This may be proved, of course, by the common sense test of their distinguishability. You can more easily see that a Jew is a Jew than that an Englishman is an Englishman." So, because the Jews are inbred, typically a niece, uncle type of marriage. They have lived in Europe and they've lived other places, but they've always bred among themselves, and that has led to their being more distinguishable visually, because they're a more limited number. The same way you can recognize like Mennonites or Amish, not just by their dress, but kind of by the build they have and the size they are, and the particular color of blue that eyes that they have. The idea that the Jews comprise a nation is the most common idea of all among Jews. Not only a nation with a past, but a nation with a future. More than that, not only a nation, but a supernation. We can go still further on the authority of Jewish statements. We can say that the future form of the Jewish nation will be a kingdom. Elkan, E-L-K-A-N, and Adler. Adler is a typical Jew-German name, sometimes a German name. Adler means eagle, like Kaiser Adler, Kaiser's eagle. Kaiser is German for Caesar, like the head of Rome. See, Kaiser, Adler, Adler eagle. Elkan and Adler, again, I'm not familiar with him, says, quote, "No serious politician today doubts that our people have a political future." And he's saying this, again, 25 to 30 years before the creation of Israel in Palestine. This future political definiteness and power was in the mind of Moses Hess when he wrote in 1862, mark the date, in the preface of his Rome and Jerusalem, these words, quote, "No nation can be indifferent to the fact that in the coming European struggle for liberty, that it may have another people as its friend or foe." Hess, complaining of the inequalities visited upon the Jews, was saying that what the individual Jew could not get because he was a Jew, the Jewish nation would be able to get because it would be a nation. He warns the Gentile nations to be careful, again in 1862, because in that, quote, "coming struggle," close quote, there would be another nation in the list, the Jewish nation, which could be the friend or foe of any it chose. And the Jewish military historian has threatened that now that Israel exists, it has nuclear weapons targeted at every capital in Europe and would not hesitate to use them if it felt it were going down. That's how strong Jewish hatred is for outsiders, but particularly for white outsiders, and that is Lachsism. Dr. Israel Friedlander says, quote, "It is enough for us to know that the Jews have always felt themselves as a separate race, sharply marked off from the rest of mankind. They feel they are different. They feel they are a team. All their top intellectuals are confirming that they are not a religion, that the religion is a cover story so far as it exists. It may be codes for daily life, but in fact they are a race of related people, and you can tell that visually. And they feel themselves different and apart, and they are. Genetic tests confirm what they feel, and their history confirms their behavior in acting separate and different from whites who foolishly treat them as individuals per their Christian inanity. As to the problems of the Jewish nation, there is plenty of Jewish testimony to the fact that the influence of Americanism, that is the idea of assimilating all these newcomers into a, as Israel Zangwill put it, you know, a melting pot, a crucible. Yet another Jew writing a play about mixing of races into one. From 1900 on, you have Horace Cowan arriving in the U.S. preaching more multiculturalism, cultural relativism. You have Franz Boas arriving here from Germany and preaching social anthropology and cultural relativism. All these Jews push the same way. And yet, behind closed doors, while they're singing songs about Americanism and race assimilation in public, they're saying a different thing about Israel and Jews in private. As to the problems of the Jewish nation, there is plenty of Jewish testimony to the fact that the influence of Americanism is harmful to Jewish life. That is, they are in antagonism, like two opposite ideas. And what they mean by Americanism is not cultural relativism. They mean people from the different white Northwestern European parts of the world coming here and losing their ethnic identity and becoming Americans and adopting Anglo-Saxon ideals that founded America. that's what he means by that, not race mixing so per se, but you see how that idea could be easily misrepresented as the diversity garbage that we have today. And they do it degree by degree, and in 1960 they would have JFK write a book talking about America's a nation of immigrants became their phrase, to hint that America's always been an idea, an experiment, a nation of immigrants, and from everywhere around the world, not just from a portion of the world, was the big lie they put out. So Americanism is harmful to Jewish life, that they are in antagonism, like two opposite ideas. And that Zionism is the modern rallying point for Jewish nationalism. The actual beliefs of the most active and influential part of Jewry in America are demonstrated in a work published by the Zionist Organization of America, Zionist Organization of America, Guide to Zionism, a quote from that. The name of their national religion, Judaism, is derived from their national designation. An unreligious Jew is still a Jew. Again, why do the conservative dopes believe? Because they just listen, and they don't think, and they don't read, and they don't know history. So if they say, oh, atheists created the Soviet, it didn't matter they were Jew, it's that they were atheists. No. And here's a Zionist Organization of America confirms, an unreligious Jew is still a Jew. And he can with difficulty escape his allegiance only by repudiating the name of Jew. Jewry Nowhere subscribes in the persons of its greatest teachers and its most authoritative representatives to the theory that the Jew is only, quote, a brother of the faith, unquote. Often he is not of the faith at all, but he is still a Jew. The, quote, religion not race, unquote, argument exposes the double minds of those political leaders who, instead of straightforwardly meeting the Jewish question, endeavor to turn all inquiry aside by an impressive confusion of the Gentile mind. There are two Jewish programs in the world, one which it is intended the Gentiles should see, and one which is exclusively for the Jews. Again, this is the esoteric, exoteric. The exoteric is the lie for the masses, and the esoteric is the hidden inner program, the truth known to the initiates, whether they be Illuminati or, in this case, Jews. In determining which is the real program, it is a safe course to adopt the one that is made to succeed. Well, look at what actually happens, tells you what the people really want, apart from any words they may use in public. It is the program sponsored by the so-called Zionists which is succeeding. That is the program whose sponsors stand for the racial and national separateness of the Jews. And of course, they know that when Africans try to break into Israel, they get shot or they get deported. They aren't allowed to come in and racially mix up Israel, whereas they're encouraged by these very same Jews to come in and destroy the white lands. So it's one program for Jews, another program for everybody else. One standard for Jews, another standard for everybody else, as I said many years ago. Regardless of what may be said to the Gentiles for the purpose of hindering or modifying their action, there is no question of what the Jew thinks of himself. He thinks of himself as belonging to a people, united to that people by ties of blood, which no amount of creedal change can weaken. Creedal being belief change. It's blood that matters, the Jew knows, not belief. Heir of that people's present and agent of that people's political future. So the Jews see themselves as a group and they act that way. And that's the key, no matter what they say, to confuse Goyim. He belongs to a race. He belongs to a nation. He seeks a kingdom to come on this earth, as opposed to heaven for Christians. A kingdom which shall be over all kingdoms, make Jews the boss of the earth, with Jerusalem the ruling city of the world. That desire of the Jewish nation may be fulfilled, and the relationship between Jewish nationalism and the nationalism of the peoples among whom the Jews dwell are pointers to the potential victory. So they have been able to take over the White West, with the sole exception of the Hitler ability to rise up and cast them out of Germany, the strongest country in Europe at the time. And that was just round one. And now we need a round two. And that ends that subtitle. It very clearly proved by citing Jewish authorities that Jews are a race, not a religion. They are bound by blood, not belief. The policy of misrepresentation, subtitle 3. To these exposures of the religion, not race arguments, the Jews have complained that they are being misrepresented. It is their usual complaint. They are always being misrepresented and persecuted, except when they are being praised for what they are not. That's a damn good line there. Jews are always being misrepresented and persecuted, both of those in quotes, except when they are being praised for what they are not. If the Jews were fully understood by the Gentiles, if the Christian churches, for example, were freed from their delusion that the Jews are Old Testament people, and if the churches, italics, really knew what the Talmudic religion is, and italics, the, quote, misrepresentation would be stronger still. The downfall of Russia was prepared by a long and deliberate program of misrepresentation of the Russian people through the Jewish world press and Jewish diplomatic service. Now, this is an example. Everything that you think you know about Jews that you have not specifically thought about, on non-Jewish issues, your mind will be filled with Jewish socialist garbage. And everything you think you know about Jews and their history that you have not specifically studied, you'll find that they are lying, and their lying always casts them as the innocent victims, and the goyim as the bigoted persecutors. And so they will say about Russia, what we're going to read, they will say about Russia that the Jews were being oppressed and the radicals rose up and liberated them, when in fact Jewish communist agitators were troubling the country and plaguing it, and the proof is what they did after they took power. So they're excusing their own radicalism that would lead to this horrendous multi-tens of millions mass murder by claiming they are the victims. The downfall of Russia was prepared by a long and deliberate program of misrepresentation of the Russian people, just as we see them today misrepresenting the situation in Iraq, in Iran. They make up lies about weapons of mass destruction. They make up lies about chemical weapons. They make up lies about Assad because they want to destroy him. They make up lies about the Ukraine in order to justify an invasion. They're trying, whatever they do, they lie. They prepare the way with lies, but they didn't have the technology back in the times of Russia. That's why it took decades instead of now. It takes simply weeks to months to prepare the ground to get the suckers to go in and do battle for them. The downfall of Russia was prepared by a long and deliberate program of misrepresentation of the Russian people. I mean, what could be more apposite than reading this? 95 years later, it's exactly the same thing. They demonize Putin as the new Hitler because he dares to stand against their plan to take over the Ukraine and completely surround Russia. And that deliberate, long and deliberate program of misrepresentation of the Russian people was carried out through the Jewish world press and diplomatic service, just as Donald Day describes in a book that we have at VNN Forum that we've talked about, Onward Christian Soldiers. Donald Day was the representative of the Chicago Tribune, Robert McCormick, a loyal American Chicago Tribune. He was their Eastern European and Northeastern European correspondent. And he talked about how the Jews producing communism and the way that they were, almost all the stringers and the reporters were a bunch of liars employed to spread lies profitable to the Jews. And that's what Henry Ford is getting into here. So the Jewish world press and Jewish diplomatic service, again, an international criminal genetic network, misrepresenting the Russian people to the world through the newspapers, through the governments. The name of Poland has been drawn, December 1920, editor. In filth, the name of Poland has been drawn in filth through the press of the U.S. under Jewish instigation. A vilification of Poland whose sole crime was that she wished to save herself from the Jews. But whenever a hand has been raised to prevent the Jews overrunning the people and secretly securing the control of the major instruments of life, The Jews have raised the cry of misrepresentation. Whenever someone dares to stand up to try to thwart them and save their own country, the Jews talk about misrepresentation, in quotes. They never meet the question outright. That is, they never deal in evidence, only in prejudicial smears, attempting to evade the question. False denial. They never meet the question outright. False denials, pleas for sympathy, and a base campaign for smearing others with their own crimes, blaming others for what Jews do, and an unworthy attempt to link others with them in their fall, constitute their whole method of defense. So the Jews try to blame everyone else for what they're doing or drag them down if they see that they're losing, but in any case, smear them and lie and not deal with any questions of fact. These are techniques they use because they're a small minority, and what they're doing is against the interests of the white majority. But the white majority doesn't have any organized body defending itself. It just has disconnected, intelligent individuals who perceive what's going on and masses of people who are duped because they listen and take at face value what they hear in the stuff they do have access to, the TV and the newspapers and the mass media that are owned by their racial enemy, that they have been trained from childhood not to recognize, in fact, to identify as the good guys and their friend. How sad and ridiculous is that? These are the thoughts of a new white head I'm giving voice to, I'm articulating for, the white body. If it had representation, it would speak as I do. It would identify Jews as the enemy, and it would kill them as the enemy. Because that's exactly what they deserve. And they have not received any, as I write, they're putting a 93-year-old German who was at one of the concentration camps. He was some kind of an accountant or something. He had nothing to do with anything beyond that. They're putting him on a show trial in Germany and marching in these rich, ridiculous Jews to retell the malicious lies they've read in books written by malicious Jewish liars. You know, putting a 93-year-old on trial. We are tolerating this. And these Jews are just crapping all over our race. It is their utter shame, degradation, and embarrassment that we allow these Jews to torture a 93-year-old of our own kind, to tell these lies about him. This is the state to which we've sunk. We need to analyze it dispassionately and take it for what it is. It's something to be ashamed of, deeply ashamed of, that we have let this rotten racial group ride herd on us for 100 years now, really for a lot longer than that. And the only reason they weren't riding herd on us earlier had nothing to do with our religion. It was purely they didn't have the technical means to do it. When you have horse-drawn carts, it's harder to create a totalitarian society. So Jews routinely, editors note, since the publication of the original over 37 years ago, so this would have been in the late 50s when Gerald L.K. Smith published The International Jew, republished it, after the Jews had tried to wipe out all the copies they could, literally physically destroy them, you know, the people who talk about book burning. Since the publication of the original over 37 years ago, other nations have resisted or tried to resist Jewish control. Readers will appreciate what has since happened to Germany and why, and what is now happening to Britain and why. So, yeah, the Nazis rose deliberately to try to regain white control over a white nation. And the Jews brought in the U.S. and Britain and other subjugated nations to destroy them. And so, false denials, pleas for sympathy, and a base campaign for smearing others with their own crimes, and an unworthy attempt to link others with them in their fall, constitute their whole method of defense. And a concentration of all the political, economic, legal weapons at their command are flung at the head of the outspoken critic of the Jews, who persist in defending his right to national existence free from Jewish infiltration, influence, and control. The policy of misrepresentation succeeds because there is a feeling strongly entrenched in Gentiles that somehow the Jews are, quote, the chosen people, and that it is dangerous to oppose them in anything. Whoever opposes the Jew is damned. The fear of the Jews, in quotes, is a very real element in life. It is just as real among the Jews as among non-Jews. The Jew himself is bound in fear to his people, and he exercises the fear of the curse throughout the sphere of religion. I will curse them that curse thee. End quotes. It remains to be proved, however, that opposition to the destructive tendencies of Jewish influences all along the principal avenues of life is a cursing of the Jews. It will be treated that way. He's saying that resistance to them is natural and necessary. If the Jews were really Old Testament people, which they are not, if they were really conscious of a mission for the blessing of all nations, the very things in which they offend would automatically disappear. If they really were who they claim, they wouldn't act like they do. If the Jew is being attacked, quote-unquote, it is not because he is a Jew, but because he is the source and life of certain tendencies and influences which, if they are not checked, mean the destruction of a moral society. And that's certainly what we see 95 years later. The only real misrepresentation in society is regarded as the Jews' privilege. That is, they call everyone who opposes them haters and anti-Semites. Knowing that is not the case, they're honestly trying to fight for their own people and for a moral society, or just simply something that isn't sex-drug-filled and nasty the way we have it today. End of that subtitle on misrepresentation. All right, the next subtitle is Disraeli Portrays the Jews. And this is the last one of the chapter 4. Benjamin Disraeli, Earl of Beaconsfield and Prime Minister of Great Britain, he was maybe a nominal Christian but racially a Jew, was a Jew and gloried in it. Disraeli was a Jew and gloried in it. And he was the one who in his novel said, "The world is run..." Sybil and Coningsby were two of his novels. The world is run behind the scenes by a rather different set of personages than is generally supposed. He's saying the Fox idiots think that the world is run democratically. And it's a battle between the red states and blue states, but in reality it's run behind the scenes by a bunch of Jews. He also said all history is like racial. All history is basically about blood and that's it. So he basically said, and he also has in those novels praise of the religious... He was a Sephardic Jew. That's the Spanish, opposed to the Polish, the Ashkenazi. Sephardic is like a 10% minority. And how proud the Sephardics are of their race and their purity of their blood are big things in at least one of those novels, Sybil and Coningsby. So he was the first Jew to become prime minister, although he didn't. Converted to Anglicanism, but racially he was a Jew. So Benjamin Disraeli, Earl of Beaconsfield and Prime Minister of Great Britain, was a Jew and gloried in it. He wrote many books, in a number of which he discussed his people in an effort to set them in a proper light. The British government was not then so Jewish as it has become, nor as it has become today, 95 years later, and Disraeli was easily one of the greatest figures in it. In his book Coningsby, Coningsby, which I mentioned, there appears a Jewish character named Sidonia, in whose personality and through whose utterances Disraeli sought to present the Jew as he would like the world to see him. Yet here is the international Jew, full dress, he is the protocolist, protocols of Zion, too, wrapped in a mystery, a man whose fingers sweep all the strings of human motive, and who controls the chief of the brutal forces, money. If a non-Jew had written a Sidonia, S-I-D-O-N-I-A, so truthfully showing the racial history and characteristics of the Jews, he would have been subjected to that terrific pressure which the Jews apply to every truth-teller about themselves. Disraeli caused his Jewish hero, Sidonia, to remark, "The world is governed by very different personages from what is imagined by those who are not behind the scenes." And even more illuminating lines by Disraeli, which half compelled the thought that, after all, he was writing to warn the world of Jewish ambition for power. Here's a quote. "You never observe a great intellectual movement in Europe in which the Jews do not greatly participate. The first Jesuits were Jews. That mysterious Russian diplomacy which so alarms Western Europe is organized and principally carried on by Jews. That is, these are, again, he's writing 50, 60 years before the Russian Revolution, which is the Jewish communist revolution. He's writing about the disorders and the radicalism and the revolutionary activity that led to that decades before. He's observing that mysterious Russian diplomacy, which so alarms Western Europe, is organized and principally carried on by Jews. That mighty revolution, which is at this moment preparing in Germany, and which will be, in fact, a second and greater reformation, and of which so little is yet known in England, is entirely developing among the, under the auspices of the Jews. And again, you want to remember that Karl Marx, thinking up communism as a scientific socialism, expected that Germany was where the world revolution would begin, not Russia. Russia was seen as backwards and agrarian and primitive, and they expected Marxism was a doctrine of the urban proletariat, the working classes. So Germany was where they expected, but they were able to achieve it in Russia first and then try to foment it in Germany in 1918 and 19, and the Freisoldaten stopped it. But they had several successful putches, the communists did, like in Bavaria, that were fought by the nationalists returning World War I after the armistice. So here you have a Jew in Britain writing and basically giving a wink and a nod and saying, here's what's going on. We are behind all these intellectual movements. We are the revolutionaries. We are upsetting Europe. We are going to bring about a new reformation, which I suppose he means communism by that. Now, and that was the end of the quote. Just how the Jews work to break down the established order of things is meant by means of ideas, as the protocols claim, is shown in a conversion or a conversation of Sidonia. How the Jews work to break down the established order by means of ideas, shown by a conversation by one of Jew Disraeli's characters, Sidonia. The Tories lose an important election at a critical moment. 'Tis the Jews come forward to vote against them. The church is alarmed at the scheme of a latitudinarian university, and learns with relief that funds are not forthcoming for its establishment. A Jew immediately advances and endows it. So he's talking about the Jewish takeover of academia and other sectors of society through their purse strings. The Jews have the money, and they use it to promote the ideas that will dissolve Aryan society. Undeniable. If these words, says Ford, had been written by a non-Jew, the cry of anti-Semitism would ring through the land. Anti-Semitism in quotes. Yet Sidonia adds, quote, and every generation, they must become more powerful and dangerous to the society that is hostile to them. And as I mentioned, F. Scott Fitzgerald shows this in his books as well. Latitudinarianism, or libertinism, or sexual promiscuity, as preached by the Frankfurt School and the authoritarian personality, as the way to destroy Aryan society and render it safe, pliable, and nourishing to Jews, he's calling it latitudinarianism. It was the word that was used by Benjamin Disraeli in his novel. Latitudinarianism is the doctrine of the protocols in a word. It is the breakup by means of a welter of so-called liberal ideas, which construct nothing themselves but have the power to destroy the established order. Several generations have passed since Disraeli's words were written. The Jew still regards every form of non-Jewish society as hostile to him. Wow. They have become more powerful and more dangerous. Those who would measure the danger look around. And again, the Jew still regards every form of non-Jewish society as hostile to him. So the Jew sees any two white men speaking without Jewish imprimatur or without a license from Jews to speak as a potential conspiracy against him. And that's why Jews support totalitarian technology and political control of all Goyim. All Goyim are Gazans, or Palestinians, to the Jews, and he will act that way so far as he is able to control them and prevent them from rising against him. Of course, he never sees himself as any kind of threat to them. He's just doing what he needs to protect himself, but you have no right or even need to protect yourself from him, is how he feels it. So they're essentially a genetic criminal clan of paranoids bent on totalitarian control of all other kinds of people, but particularly of white men. And that's really all you need to know about Jews. You have to treat them as a hostile alien group because they are a hostile alien group. They're not individuals. The Jew says that the protocols are inventions. Is Benjamin Disraeli an invention? Was this Jewish Prime Minister of Great Britain misrepresenting his people in his own novels? He showed that in Russia, the very country where the Jews of his time complained they were the least free, the Jews were in control. He showed that the Jews knew the technique of revolution, foretelling in the book the revolution that shortly broke out in Germany. How did he foreknow it? He's talking about 1848. How did he foreknow it? Because that revolution was developing under the auspices of Jews, and though it was true that, quote, so little is yet known in England, Disraeli the Jew knew it, and knew it to be Jewish in origin and development and purpose. That was the great socialist pre-communist revolutions that drove a lot of the, it lost, it didn't win, it drove a lot of Germans to the U.S. after, you know, the worst kind too, the kinds that want socialism and giant government, even if they're not Jews. And of course, most of them were not Jews who came to the U.S., but still might be sympathetic. Not all communists are Jews. Plenty of them are goy who are fooled by it or just simply want it. How did he foreknow it? Because that revolution was developing under the auspices of Jews, and though it was true that so little is known in England, Disraeli the Jew knew it and knew it to be Jewish in origin and development. The European revolutions of 1848, Jewish in origin and development and purpose. One point is clear. Disraeli told the truth. He presented his people before the world with correctness. He described Jewish power, Jewish purpose, and Jewish method with a certainty of touch that betokens more than knowledge. He shows a racial sympathy and understanding. And remember, he's considered a conservative today. Why did he do it? Disraeli the flamboyant and most oriental, again, that means he's Sephardic, he's from the East, rather than being Ashkenazi. Disraeli the flamboyant and most oriental of courtiers and suave of politicians, with a keen financial ability, was it that, why did he do it? Disraeli the flamboyant, most oriental of courtiers and suave of politicians with a keen financial ability. Why did he do it? Was it that typically racial boastfulness, that dangerous aggressive conceit in which the Jew gives up most of his secrets? No matter. He is the one man who told the truth about the Jews without being accused of, quote-unquote, misrepresenting the Jews. And that will end chapter 4. And we're nearly halfway through The International Jew. Anyway, that was... I'm Alex Linder. I was reading to you from Henry Ford's 1921, The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem. Chapter 4, Are the Jews a Nation? We've shown and conclusively that they are a nation. They do perceive themselves that way. They do declare, their greatest historians and rabbis and political leaders do declare that Judaism is a thing of the blood, not of belief. You can be an unbeliever and still be a Jew. They are a people. They perceive themselves to have a national. Judaism is a form of patriotism or nationalism. They are a people with a past as they see it, with a history as they see it, and a future as they see it. And events would prove them right as they established Israel about 27 years after the writing of this book. Anyway, I want to thank you for listening to me today. And find everything, as always, that I do at vnnforum.com. Follow me on Twitter at TheLinderFiles. If I ever get banned from there, you can look for me somewhere else on Twitter. But you can always find everything that we do here at the Learning College and Vanguard Audiobooks at vnnforum.com, where you're welcome to join and participate with the good people we have. Thanks for listening today, and I'll be back with you again real soon.